Hello and welcome to the Beyond podcast and another of our continuing crossover episodes with our YouTube channel where our exploring work primarily now lives. This is a taster of our work where we start with a slow read through, a first look, and then follow up with a number of fast-paced second looks, sometimes with a more of a performance element. This interlude, Callisto and Melibee, was looked at 3 times, and this episode is the first of 2 episodes running the play at pace. We've skipped past the first look, slow look, and we're now into the middle of the second look process. And if you enjoy this, then do follow the links in the show notes to the video of our next session, where we try to enact the text with more performance and visuals. And of course, if you want to do the journey, you can go back and there's a full playlist of all the videos that we did on the YouTube channel on this. In fact, if you're listening in the future, you'll be able to watch things that we haven't even done yet when I recorded this link. I'm sure there'll be more stuff in the future. It's a never-ending process. There's always more to come. Till then, I, future Robert Crichton, will pass you over to past Robert Crichton for this run of Callisto and Melibee from the press of John Rastall. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to this second look exploring session looking at Callisto and Melibee, a new comedy in English in the manner of an interlude, right elegant and full of craft of rhetoric, wherein is showed and described as well the beauty and good properties of women as their vices and evil conditions, with a moral conclusion and exhortation to virtue. So there. This is from the printing press of John Rastall. We have looked at this play before in its entirety in a first look session. We have also done a workshop on the fabulous Celestina, and we are now engaging in our new process for second looks. So we're going to do a fast read through now, where the people have had some opportunity to read in advance, but not necessarily that much time. We're then going to take a couple of weeks and we're going to come back and try and give this a bit more oomph and welly and make a few artistic decisions for a second take of this second look. This is a play from the 1520s. It may have been staged in one of the first semi-purpose-built stages in England since the good old days of, the Romans. Yes, Finsbury Fields it may have been performed at. It may not have been. It may just be a thing for the printing press. We don't know for certain. Anyway, without further ado, let me introduce the performers for today. So, performing the part of Danio, father to Melibee, is...
I am Greg, and in this, as far as this play is concerned, I've gone from playing the aging bored to the father. Great progress.
Yes, Greg has been with us since the first time we looked at this text, so it's going to be an interesting process of what he finds new and different. Reading Callisto today is...
Hi, I'm Eric, and in Greece, Callisto is actually an organization that saves bears. So I'm like, I thought this was like a sort of some sort of bear-related joke, but apparently not.
No, but we can make some bear-related jokes later. Reading Melibee today is...
Rachel Nicole, actor in New Jersey.
Reading Celestina the Bored is...
Lindsay Beecham, actor currently in Norfolk. Probably quite soon being in Cheltenham for a bit.
Ooh. And reading Parmino, one of the servant to Callisto is...
I'm Alex Scott Fairley. I'm an actor in Highland Perthshire.
And finally, reading Sempronio is...
My name is Alexandra and I'm really excited to play a parasite. That's how my character is described.
Yes, or are they? We shall see. Without further ado, I'm going to disappear and leave this bunch of reprobates to entertain me while I make textual notes and adjustments for our next run at this text. So, first up, it will be Melibee. So, take it away.
Franciscus Petrarchus, the poet laureate, saith that nature, which is mother of all things, without strife can give life to nothing create. And Heraclitus, the wise clerk, in his writing, saith in all things create strife in their working. And there is nothing under the firmament with any other in all points equivalent. And according to their diets rehearsed as thus, all things are create and manner of strife. These foolish lovers, then, that be so amorous, from pleasure to displeasure, how lead they their life, now sorry, now sad, now joyous, now pensive. Alas, I, poor maiden, then what shall I do, cumbered by dotage of one Callisto? I know that nature hath given me beauty, with sanguineous complexion, favor, and fairness. The more to God ought I to do fealty, with will, life, land, and love of perfectness, I deny not, but Callisto is of great worthiness. But what of that? For all his high estate, his desire I defy, and utterly shall hate. Of his saying, his sayings and suits so importune, that of my life he maketh me almost weary. Oh, his lamentations and exclamations on fortune, with similitude of manner as one that should die. But who shall pity this, in faith? Not I. Shall I accomplish his carnal desire? Nay, yet at a stake rather burn in a fire. Of truth, I am sorry for his trouble to strive with himself thus for love of me, but though his sorrows, I assure you, should double, out of his danger will I be at liberty. Nay, nay, he shall never that day see his voluptuous appetite consented by me. Wist he now that I were present here, I assure you shortly he would seek me, and without doubt he doth now inquire whither I am gone or where I should be. See, is he not now come? I repent me. Alas, of this man I can never be rid. Would to Christ I wist where I might be hid.
By you, fair Marlebea, may it be seen the grace, the gifts, the greatness of God.
Wherein?
In taking effect of Dame Nature's stream, nor earthly, but angelic of likelihood, in beauty so passing the kind of womanhood, oh God, I might in your presence be able to manifest my daughter's incomparable. Greater were that reward than the grace heaven to obtain by works of pity. Not so glorious be the saints that see God's face. Nay, joy not so much as I do you to see. Yet difference there is between them and me, for they glorify by his assured presence, and I in torment because of your absence.
Why thinkest thou that so great a reward?
Yea, more greater than if God would set me in heaven above all saints, and more in regard, and think it more a higher felicity.
Yet more greater thy reward shall be, if thou flee from the determination of thy consent of mind by such temptation. I perceive the extent of thy words all, as of the wit of him that would have the virtue of me, such a woman, to become thrall. Go thy way with sorrow, I would thou knew I have foul scorn of thee, I tell thee true, or of any human creature with me should begin any communication pertaining to sin. And I promise thee, where thou art present while I live, by my will, I will be absent.
Lo, out of all joy I am fallen in woe, upon whom adverse fortune hath cast her chance of cruel hate, which causeth now away to go the keeper of my joy and all my pleasance. Alas, alas, now to me what annoyance.
Dieu garde, my lord, and God be in this place.
Sempronio?
Yea, sir.
Sir, I shrew thy face. Why hast thou been from me so long absent?
For I have been about your business, to order such things as were convenient. Your house and horse and all things was to dress.
Oh, Sempronio, have pity on my distress, for all of all creatures I am the woefulest.
How now? What is the cause of your unrest?
For I serve in love the goodliest thing that is or ever was.
What is she?
It is one which is all other exceeding, the picture of angels, if thou her see. Phoebus or Phoebe, or no comparison maybe to her.
What height she?
Melibea is her name.
Marry, sir, this would make a wild horse tame.
I pray thee, Sempronio, go fet me my lute and bring some chair or stool with thee. The arguments of love that I may dispute with, which science I find thou art without pity. Hie thee, Sempronio, hie thee, I pray thee.
Sir, shortly, I assure you, it shall be done.
Then farewell, Christ send thee again soon. Oh, what fortune is equal unto mine? Oh, what woeful wight with me may compare? The thirst of sorrow is my mixed wine, which daily I drink with deep draughts of care.
Tush, sir, be merry! Let pass away the mare. How say you? Have I not hied me lightly? Here is your chair and lute to make you merry.
Merry, quotha? Nay, that will not be, but I must needs sit for very feebleness. Give me my lute, and thou shalt see how I shall sing my unhappiness. This lute is out of tune now, as I guess. Alas, in tune how should I set it, when all harmony to me discordeth each whit, as he who to whose reason is unruly? For I feel sharp needles within my breast, peace, war, truth, hatred, and injury, hope, and suspect, and all in one chest.
Behold, Nero, in the love of Poppaea oppressed, Rome how he brent, old and young wept, but she took no thought, nor nevertheless slept.
Greater is my fire, and less pity showed me.
I will not mock, this fool is a lover.
What sayest thou?
I say, how can that fire be that tormenteth but one living man greater than that fire that brenneth a whole city here and all the people therein?
Marry, for that fire is greatest that brenneth very sore and blasteth longest, and greater is the fire that brenneth one soul than that which brenneth 100 bodies.
His saying in this none can control.
None but such as list to make lies, and if the fire of purgatory bred in such wise, I had to leave her my spirit in brute beasts should be, than to go thither and then to the deity.
Marry, sir, that is a spice of heresy.
Why so?
For ye speak like no Christian man.
I would thou knewest Melibea worship I. In her I believe, and in her I love.
Then with thee Melibea is a great woman. I know on which foot thou dost halt on. I shall shortly heal thee my life thereupon.
An incredible thing thou dost promise me.
Nay, it is easy enough to do. But first, to heal a man, knowledge must be of the sickness, then to give counsel thereto.
What counsel can rule him, Sempronia, that keepeth in him no order of counsel?
Is this Callisto? His fire now I know well, how that love over him hath cast her net, in whose perseverance is all inconstancy.
Why, is not Eliseus' love in thine met?
What then?
Why reprovest me then of ignorance?
For thou settest man's dignity and obeisance to the imperfection of the weak woman.
A woman? A god of goddesses!
Believest that, then?
Yea, and as a goddess I here confess, and I believe there is no such sovereign in heaven as though she be in earth.
Peace, peace! A woman, a god, nay, to god, a villain! Of your saying ye may be sorry.
It is plain.
Why so?
Because I love her, and think surely to obtain my desire I am unworthy.
Oh, fearful heart, why comparest thou with Nimrod or Alexander of this world, not lords only, but worthy to subdue heaven, as saying goeth, and thou reputest thyself more high than them both, and despairest so cowardly to win a woman, of whom hath been so many, gotten and ungotten, never heard of any. It is recited in the Feast of St. John. This is the woman of ancient malice. Of whom but of a woman was it sung on that Adam was expulsed from paradise? She put man to pain, whom Eli did despise.
Then sith Adam gave him to their governance, am I greater than Adam myself to advance?
Nay, but of those men it were wisdom that overcame them to seek remedy, and not of those that they did overcome. Flee from their beginnings, eschew their folly. Thou knowest they do evil things many. They keep no mean but rigour of intention, be it fair or foul, wilful without reason. Keep them never so close, they will be showed. Give tokens of love by many subtle ways, seeming to be sheep and serpently shrewd. Craft in them renewing that never decays. Their sayings and sightings provoking their plays Oh, what pain is to fulfill their appetites and to accomplish their wanton delights. It is a wonder to see their dissembling, their flattering countenance, their ingratitude, inconstancy, false witness, feigned weeping, their vainglory, and how they can delude their foolishness, their jangling, not mute, their lecherous lust and vileness, therefore, witchcrafts and charms to make men to their law, their embalming and their unshamefacedness, their bawdry, their subtlety and fresh attiring, what trimming, what painting to make fairness, their false intents and flickering smiling. Therefore, lo, it is an old saying that women be the devil's nets and head of sin, and man's misery and paradise did begin.
But what thinkest thou by me yet for all this?
Marry, sir, you were a man of clear wit, whom nature hath endued with the best gifts, as beauty and greatness of members perfect, strengths, lightness, and beyond this, each whit, fortune hath parted with you of her influence, for to be able of liberal expense. For without goods, whereof fortune is lady, no man can have wealth. Therefore, by conjecture, you should be beloved of everybody.
But not of Melibea now, I am sure, and though thou hadst praised me without measure and compared me without comparison, yet she is above in every condition. Behold her nobleness, her ancient lineage, her great patrimony, her excellent wit, her resplendent virtue, her portly courage, her godly grace, her sovereign beauty perfit. No tongue is able well to express it. But yet, I pray thee, let me speak a while myself to refresh in rehearsing of my style. I begin at her hair, which is so goodly, crisp to her heels, tied with fine lace, far shining beyond fine gold of Araby. I trow the sun color to it may give place, that to who to behold it might have the grace, would say in comparison nothing countervails.
Then is it not like the hair of ass tails?
What foul comparison! This fellow rails, her gay glassing eyes so fair and bright, her brows, her nose in a mean no fashion fails, her mouth proper and feet, her teeth small and white, her lips ruddy, her body straight upright, her little teats to the eyes a pleasure. Oh, what a joy it is to see such a figure. Her skin of whiteness and darketh the snow with rose color anewed. I thee ensure her little hands in mean manner. This no trow. Her fingers small and long with nails ruddy, most pure of proportion, none in portraiture without peer, worthy to have for fairness the apple that Paris gave Venus the goddess.
Sir, have ye all done?
Yea, marry, what then?
I put case all this ye have said be true. Yet are ye more noble, sith ye be a man.
Wherein?
She is imperfect, I would ye know, as all women be, and of less value. Philosophers say the matter is less worthy than the form, so is woman to man, surely.
I love not to hear this altercation between Melibea and me, her lover.
Possible it is, in every condition, to abhor her as much as you do love her. In the woman beguiling is the danger that ye shall see hereafter with eyes free.
With what eyes?
With clear eyes, trust me.
With what eyes do I see now?
With dim eyes, which show a little thing much. But for ye shall not despair, I assure you, no labour nor diligence in me shall grudge to so trusty and friendly ye shall find me such, in all things possible that ye can acquire the thing to accomplish to your desire.
God bring that to pass. So glad it is to me to hear thee thus, though I hope not in my doings.
And I shall do it. Trust me for a surety.
God reward thee for thy gentle intending. I give thee this chain of gold in rewarding.
Sir, God reward you, and send us good speed. I doubt not but I shall perform it indeed. But without rewards, it is hard to work well.
I am content, so thou be not negligent.
Nay, be not you, for it passeth a marvel, the master slow, the servant to be diligent.
How thinkest it can be? Show me thine intent.
Sir, I have a neighbour, a mother of Baudry that can provoke the hard rocks to lechery. In all evil deeds, she is perfect wise. I trow more than 1,000 virgins have been destroyed by her subtle devices, for she never faileth where she begins. Alone by this craft, her living she wins. Maids, wives, widows, and every one, if she once meddle, there escapeth none.
How might I speak with her, Sempronia?
I shall bring her hither unto this place, but you must in any wise let rewards go and show her your griefs in every case.
Else were I not worthy to attain grace, but alas, Sempronio, thou tarriest too long.
Sir, God be with you.
Christ make thee strong. The mighty and perdurable God be his guide, as he guided the three kings into Bedlam from the east by the star, and again did provide as their conduct to return to their own realm. So speed my Sempronio to quench the leam of this fire, which my heart doth waste and spend, and that I may come to my desired end. To pass the time, now will I walk up and down within mine orchard, and myself to go to commune and talk. And pray that fortune to me be not hard, longing to hear, whether made or marred, my message shall return by my servant Sempronio. Thus farewell, my lords, for a while I will go.
Now the blessing that Our Lady gave her son, that same blessing I give now to you all, that I am come thus homely, I pray you of pardon. I am sought and sent for as a woman. Universal. Celestina of truth my name is to call. Sempronio for me doth inquire, and it was told me I should have found him here. I'm sure he will come hither anon. But the whilst, I shall tell you a pretty game. I have a wench of Sempronio's, a pretty one, that sojourneth with me. Elikea is her name. But the last day we were both nigh, a stark shame, for Sempronio would have her to himself several, and she loveth one Crito better, or as well. This Crito and Elikea sat drinking in my house, and I also make him merry, and as the devil would, far from our thinking, Sempronio almost came on us suddenly. But then wrought I my craft of Baudry. I had Crito go up and make himself a room to hide him in my chamber among the broom. Then made I Elikea sit down a sewing. And I, with my rock, began for to spin, as who saith of Sempronio we had no knowing. He knocked at the door, and I let him in, and for a countenance I did begin to catch him in mine arms, and say, "See, see, who kisseth me, Elikea, and will not kiss thee?" Elikea, for a countenance, made her grieved, and would not speak, but still did so. "Why speak ye not?" quod Sempronio. "Be ye moved?" "Have I not a cause?" quoth she. "No," quoth he, "I trow." "Oh, traitor," quoth she, "for well dost thou know where hast thou been these 3 days from me, that the imposthumous and evil death take thee?" "Peace, mine Elikea," quod he, "why say thus? Alas, why put you yourself in this woe? The hot fire of love so brenneth between us that my heart is with yours wherever I go. And for 3 days' absence to say to me so, in faith, me thinketh, ye be to blame. But now, hark well, for here beginneth the game. Crito, in my chamber above, that was hidden, I think lay not easily, and began to jumble. Sempronio heard that, and asked who was within, above in the chamber that did so tumble. "Who?" quoth she. "A lover of mine." "Mayhap ye stumble," quod he, "on the truth, as many one doth." "Go up," quoth she, "and look whether it be sooth." "Well," quoth he, "I go." "Nay," thought I, "not so. I say, come, Sempronio, let this fool alone, for of thy long absence she is in such woe, and half beside herself, that a wit nigh gone." "Well," quoth he, "above yet there is one." "Wilt thou know?" quod I. "Yea," quoth he, "I thee require." "It is a wench," quoth I, "sent me by a friar." "What friar?" quoth he. "Wilt thou needs know?" quoth I. "Then It is the friar. Oh, quod he, what a load hath that woman to bear him. Yea, quoth I, though women per case bear heavy full oft, yet they gall in no place. Then he laughed. Yea, quoth I, no more words of this, for this time too long we spend here amiss.
Oh, Mother Celestine, I pray God prosper thee.
My son Sempronio, I'm glad of our meeting, and as I hear say, ye go about to seek me.
Of truth, to seek you was mine hither coming. Mother, lay apart now all other thing, and all only tend to me, and imagine in that I purpose now to begin. Callisto, in the love of fair Melibea, burneth, wherefore of thee he hath great need.
Thou sayst well, knowest not me, Celestina, I have the end of the matter, and for more speed thou shalt wade no farther, for of this deed I am as glad as ever was the surgeon for salves for broke heads to make provision. And so intend I to do to Callisto, to give him hope and assure him remedy, for long hope to the heart much trouble will do. Wherefore, to the effect thereof, I will hie.
A peace, for methinketh Callisto is nigh.
Armino.
What say you?
Wottest who is here? Sempronio, that reviveth my cheer.
It is Sempronio, with that old bearded whore. Be ye they my master so sore, for doth long?
Peace, I say, Parmenio. Or go out of the door. Comest thou to hinder me? Then dost thou me wrong? I pray thee help for to make me more strong to win this woman, else, God's forbode, she hath equal power of my life under God.
Wherefore to her do ye make such sorrow? Think ye in her arse there is any shame? The contrary who telleth you be never his borough. For as much she glorifieth her in her name, to be called an old whore as ye would of fame. Dogs in the street and children at every door bark and cry out, there goeth an old whore.
Who is all this? Dost thou know her?
Yea, that day are gone. For a false whore the devil overthrow her. My mother, when she died, gave me to her alone, and a starker bawd was there never none. For that I know, I dare well say. Let's see the contrary who can lay. I have been at her house and seen her trinkets for painting, things innumerable, squalms and balms. I wonder where she gets the things that she hath with folks for to fable, and to all bawdry ever agreeable. Yet worse than that, which will never be laughed, not only a bawd, but a witch by her craft.
Say what thou wilt, son, spare not me.
I prithee, Parmeno, leave thy malicious envy.
Hark hither, Sempronio, here is but we three. In that I have said, canst thou deny?
Come hence, Parmeno, I love not this, I. And, good mother, grieve you not, I you pray. My mind I shall show now, hark what I say. O notable woman, O ancient virtue, O glorious hope of my desired intent, the end of my delectable hope to renew, my regeneration to this life present, resurrection from death so excellent, thou art above all other. I desire humbly to kiss thy hands, wherein lieth my remedy, but mine unworthiness maketh resistance. Yet worship I the ground that thou goest on, beseeching me, good woman, with most reverence on my pain, with thy pity to look upon. Without thy comfort, my life is gone. To revive my dead spirits, thou mayest prefer me with the words of thy mouth to make or mar me.
Sempronio, can I live with these bones that thy master giveth me here for to eat? Words are but wind. Therefore, at once bid him close his mouth and do his purse get. For money maketh the merchant, that must jet. I've heard his words, but where be his deeds? For without money, in me, nothing speeds.
What saith she, Sempronio? Alas, my heart bleeds that I with you, good woman, mistrust should be.
Sir, she thinketh that money all thing feeds.
Then come on, Sempronio, I pray thee with me. And tarry here, mother, a while. I pray thee, for where of mistrust ye have me appealed. Have here my cloak, though your doubt be assoiled.
Now do ye well, for weeds among corn or suspicions with friends did never well. For faithfulness of words turned to a scorn maketh minds doubtful, good reason doth tell.
Come on, Sempronio, thou givest me good counsel.
Go ye before, and I shall wait you upon. Farewell, mother, we will come again anon.
How say ye, my lords? See ye not this smoke in my master's eyes that they do cast? The one hath his chain, the other his cloak, and I am sure they will have all at last. In sample may be by this that is past, how servants be deceitful in their master's folly. Nothing but for lucre is all their bawdry.
It pleaseth me, Parmeno, that we together may speak, whereby thou mayst see I love thee. Yet undeserved now thou comest hither, whereof I care not, but virtue warneth me to flee temptation and follow charity, to do good against ill, and so I rede thee, Sempronio, and I will help thy necessities, and in token now that it shall so be, I pray thee among us, let us have a song, for where harmony is, there is amity.
What? An old woman sing?
Why not among? I pray thee no longer the time prolong.
Now go to when thou wilt. I'm ready.
Shall I begin?
Yea, but take not too high.
How say ye now by this, little young fool, for the third part, Sempronio, we must get. After that, thou master shall come to school to sing the fourth part that his purse shall sweat, for I see craftily the song can set. Though thy master be hoarse, his purse shall sing clear, and taught to solf that woman's flesh is dear. How sayest to this, thou pretty Parmeno? Thou knowest not the world, nor no delights therein. Dost understand me? In faith, I trow, no. Thou art young enough the game to begin. Thy master hath waded himself so far in, and to bring him out, lieth not in me, old poor.
Yeah, thou should say it lieth not in me, old whore.
Ah, horse and a shame takes such a knave. How darest thou with me, thou boy, be so bold?
Because such knowledge of thee I have.
Why, who art?
Parmeno, son to Albert the Old. I dwelt with thee by the river where wine was sold, and thy mother, I trow, hight Claudena, that a wild fire bren thee, Celestina.
But thy mother was as old a whore as I. Come hither, thou little fool, let me see thee. Oh, it is even he, by our blessed lady. What little urchin has forgotten me? When thou layest at my bed's feet, how merry were we.
Ah, oh, thou old matron, it were arms thou were dead. How wouldst thou pluck me up to thy bed's head and embrace me hard unto thy belly? And for thou smelledst oldly, I ran from thee.
Shameful horse, and fie upon thee, fie, fie, come hither. And now, shortly, I charge thee that all this foolish speaking thou let be. Leave wantonness of youth, then shalt thou do well. Follow the doctrine of thy elders and counsel, to whom thy parents, on whose souls God have mercy, in pain of cursing, bade thee be obedient. In pain whereof, I command thee straightly, too much in mastership, put not thine intent. No trust is in them, if thine own be spent. Masters nowadays covet to bring about all for themselves, and let their servants go without. Thy master, men say, and as I think he be, but like careth not to come to his service. Fair words shall not lack, but small rewards, trust me. Make Sempronio thy friend in any wise, for he can handle him in the best guise. Keep this, and for thy profit tell it to none, but look that Sempronio and thou be one.
Mother Celestine, I wot not what ye mean. Callisto is my master, and so I will take him. And as for riches, I defy it clean. For whosoever with wrong rich doth make him, sooner than he gat, it will forsake him. I love to live in joyful poverty, and to serve my master with truth and honesty.
Truth and honesty be riches of the name, but surety of wealth is to have riches. and after that for to get him good fame. By reports of friends, this is truth, doubtless. Then no such man of friend can I express as Sempronio for both your profits to speed, which lieth in my hands now, if ye be agreed. Oh, Parmeno, what a life may we endure! Sempronio loveth the daughter of Eliso.
And who? Arusa?
Likest her?
Peradventure?
I shall get her to thee. That shall I do.
Nay, Mother Celestine, I purpose not so. A man should be conversant, I hear tell, with them that be ill, and think to do well. Sempronio, his ensample, shall not make me better nor worse, nor his faults will I hide. But, Mother Celestine, a question to thee. Is not sin anon in one espied, that is drowned in delight? How should he provide against virtue to save his honesty?
Like a child without wisdom, thou answerest me. Without company, mirth can have none estate. Use no sloth. Nature abhorreth idleness, which leaseth delight to nature appropriate. In sensual causes, delight is chief mistress, specially recounting love's business. To say thus doth she, the time thus they pass, and such manner they use, and thus they kiss and bass, and thus they meet and embrace together. What speech, what grace, what plays is between them. Where is she? There she goeth, let us see whither. Now pleased, now froward, now mum, now strike up, minstrel, with saws of love. The old problem, sing sweet songs, now jousts and tourney. Of new inventions, what conceits find they? But she goeth to mass, tomorrow she cometh out. Behold her better. Yonder goes a cuckold. I left her alone, she cometh. Turn about. Lo, thus, Parmeno, thou mayest behold, friends will talk together, as I have told. Wherefore perceive thou that I say truly, never can be delight without company.
Mother, as I promised to assoil thy doubt, here I give thee 100 pieces of gold.
Sir, I promise you I shall bring it about, all thing to purpose, even as ye would. For your reward I will do as I should. Be merry, fear nothing, content ye shall be.
Then, mother, farewell. Be diligent, I pray thee. How sayest, Sempronio? Have I done well?
Yea, sir, in my mind, and most according.
Then wilt thou do after my counsel? After this old woman wilt thou be hying to remember and haste her in everything?
Sir, I am content as ye command me.
Then go and bid Parmeno come, I pray thee. Now God be their guides, the posts of my life, my relief from death, the ambassadors of my wealth, my hope, my hap, my quietness, my strife, my joy, my sorrow, my wit, sickness, my health, the hope of this old woman, my heart telleth that comfort shall come shortly as I intend, or else come death and make of me an end.
In faith, it maketh no force nor matter much.
What sayest, Parmeno? What sayest to me?
Marry, I say plainly that yonder old witch and Sempronio together will undo thee.
ill-tongued wretch, will ye not see? Thinkest thou, Lurden, thou handlest me fair? Why, knave, wouldst thou put me in despair?
Lo, sirs, my master, you see, is angry. But this it is, tell fools for their profit, or warn them for their wealth, it is but folly. For strike them on the heel, and as much wit shall come forth at their forehead to perceive it. Go thy way, Callisto, for on my charge thy thrift is sealed up, though thou be at large. Oh, how unhappy I am to be true, for other men win by falsehood and flattery. I lose for my truth, the world doth so ensue. Truth is put back and taken for folly. Therefore now I will change my copy. If I had done as Celestine bade me, Callisto to his mission still would have had me. This giveth me warning from henceforward how to deal with him for all thing as he will. I will be the same forward or backward. I will go straight to him and follow him still. Say as he saith, be it good or ill. And sith these bawds get good provoking lechery, I trust flattery shall speed as well as bawdry.
I pray you, came this woman here never sin? And faith, to enter here I am half a drad, and yet why so? I may boldly come in. I am sure from you all I shall not be had. But Jesus, Jesus, be these men so mad on women as they say? How should it be? It is but fables and lies, ye may trust me.
I'll be here.
Who is there?
Will you buy any thread?
Yea, Mary, good mother, I pray you come in.
Christ save you, fair mistress, and God be your speed, and both be to you and your kin. And Mary, God's mother, that blessed virgin, preserve and prosper your womanly personage, and well to enjoy your youth and pucelage. For that time pleasures are most eschewed, and age is the hospital of all manner sickness, the resting place of all thought unrelieved, the sport of time, past the end of all quickness, neighbour to death, a dry stock without sweetness, discomfort, disease, all age alloweth, a tree without sap, that small charge boweth.
I marvel, mother, ye speak so much ill of age that all folk desire affectuously.
Desire hurt for themselves as all of will, and the cause why they desire to come thereby is for to live, for death is so loathly. He that is sorrowful would live to be sorrier, and he that is old would live to be older. Fair damsel, who can show all the hurts of age? Weariness, feebleness, his discontenting, his childishness, frowardness of his rage, wrinkling in the face, lack of sight and hearing, hollowness of mouth, fall of teeth, faint of going, and worst of all, possessed with poverty, and the limbs arrested with debility.
Mother, ye have taken great pain for age. Would ye not return to the beginning?
Fools are they that are past their passage to begin again, which be at the ending. A better is possession than the desiring.
I desire to live longer, do I well or no?
That ye desire well, I think not so. For as soon goeth to market the lambs fell as the sheep's. None so old but may live a year. And there is none so young, but ye wot well may die in a day. And no advantages here between youth and age, the matter is clear.
With thy fabling and thy reasoning, I wis I am beguiled, but I have known thee ere this. Art not Celestine that dwelleth by the riverside?
Yea, forsooth.
Indeed, age hath arrayed thee, that thou art she, now can scant be espied. Methinketh by thy favour thou shouldst be she, thou art sore changed, thou mayest believe me.
Fair maiden, keep thou well this time of youth, but beauty shall pass at the last, this is truth, yet I'm not so old as ye judge me.
But mother, I joy much of thine acquaintance, and thy motherly reasons right well please me. And now I thank thee here for thy past tense. Farewell. Till another time that hap may chance, again that we two may meet together. Mayhap ye have business, I know not whither.
Oh, angelic image, oh heart so precious, oh, how thou speakest, it rejoiceth me to hear. Knowest thou not by the divine mouth gracious that against the infernal fiend Lucifer we should not only live by bread here, but by our good works, wherein I take some pain? If ye know not my mind now, all is in vain.
Show me, mother, heartily all thy necessity, and if I can, I shall provide the remedy.
My necessity? Nay, God, what, it is not for me. As mine, I left it at home, surely, to eat when I will and drink when I'm dry, and I thank God ever one penny hath been mine, to buy bread when I list and to have four for wine. Before I was widow, I cared never for it, for I had wine enough of mine own to sell, and with the toast and wine by the fire I could sit, and with 2 dozen sops the colic to quell. But now with me it is not so well, for I have nothing but that is brought me in a pitcher pot of quarts, scant 3. Thus I pray God help them that be needy, for I speak not for myself alone, but as well for other, however speed I. The infirmity is not mine, though that I groan. It is for another that I make moan, and not for myself. It is another way, but what I must moan, where I dare not say.
Say what thou wilt, and for whom thou lest.
Now, gracious damsel, I thank you then, that to give audience ye be so pressed with liberal readiness to me, old woman, which giveth me boldness to show what I can of one that lieth in danger by sickness, remitting his languor to your gentleness.
What meanst thou, I pray thee, gentle mother? Go forth with thy demand as thou hast done. On the one part thou provokest me to anger, and on the other side to compassion. I know not how thy answer to fashion. The words which thou speakest in my presence be so misty, I perceive not thy sentence.
I said I left one in danger of sickness, drawing to death for aught that I can see. Now choose you or no to be murderess, or revive him with a word to come from thee.
I am happy if my word be of such necessity to any Christian man, or else God's forbid. To do a good deed is liking to God, for good deeds to good men be allowable, and especially to needy above all other, and ever to good deeds ye shall find me agreeable, trusting ye will extort me to none other. Therefore, fear not, speak your petition, good mother, for they that may heal sick folk and do refuse them, surely of their death they cannot excuse them.
Full well and graciously the case you consider, for I never believed that God in vain would give you such countenance and beauty together, but charity therewith to relieve folk in pain. And as God hath given you, so give him again. For folks be not made for themselves only, for then they should live like beasts all rudely, among which beasts yet some be pitiful. The unicorn humbleth himself to a maid, and a dog in all his power, ireful, let a man fall to ground, his anger is delayed, thus by nature pity is conveyed. The cock, when he scrapeth and happeth meat to find, calleth for his hens, lo, see the gentle kind. Should human creatures then be of cruelness? Should not they to their neighbours show charity, and especially to them wrapped in sickness, when they that may heal them cause the infirmity?
Mother, without delay, for God's sake, show me, I pray thee heartily, without more praying, where is the patient that is so paining?
Fair damsel, thou mayest well have knowledge here too, that in this city is a young knight, and of clear lineage, called Callisto, whose life and body is all in thee, I plight. The pelican, to show nature's right, feedeth his bird. Methinketh I should not preach thee. Thou wottest what I mean, as nature should teach thee.
Ah, is this the intent of thy conclusion? Tell me no more of this matter, I charge thee. Is this the dolent for whom thou makest petition? Art thou come hither thus to deceive me? Thou bearded dame, shameless thou seem'st to be. Is this he that hath the passion of foolishness? Thinkest thou, ribald, I am such an one of lewdness? It is not said, I see well, in vain, the tongue of man and woman worst members be. Thou brute bawd, thou great enemy to honesty certain, cause of secret errors, Jesu, Jesu, Benedetti, some good body take this old thief from me, that thus would me deceive with her false sleight. Get out of my sight now, get thee hence straight.
In an evil hour came I hither, I may say, I would I broken my legs twain.
Go hence, thou brothel, go hence in the devil way. Bidest thou yet to increase my pain? Wilt thou make me of this fool to be fain, to give him life, to make him merry, and to myself death, to make me sorry? Wilt thou bear away profit for my perdition, and make me lease the house of my father, to win the house of such an old matron as thou art, shamefulest of all other? Thinkest thou that I understand not, thou false mother, thy hurtful message, thy false subtle ways? Make amends to God, thou livest too long days. Answer thou, traitress, how darest be so bold?
The fear of thee maketh me so dismayed that the blood of my body is almost cold. Alas, fair maiden, what hast thou said to me, poor widow? Why am I denied? Hear my conclusion, which is of honesty. Without cause you blame this gentleman and me.
I say I will hear no more of that fool. Was he not here with me even now? Thou old witch, thou bringest me in great dole. Ask him what answer he had of me and how I took his demand. As now, no mayst thou, more showing is but lost, where no mercy can be. Thus I answered him, and thus I answered thee.
The more strange she maketh, the gladder I am I. There is no tempest that ever doth endure.
What sayest thou? What sayest thou, shameful enemy? Speak out!
Though feared I am of your displeasure, your anger is so great, I perceive it, sure, and your patience is in so great an heat, that for woe and fear I both weep and sweat.
Little is the heat in comparison to say to the great boldness of thy demeaning.
Fair maiden, yet one word. Now, I you pray, appease with patience and bear my saying. It is for a prayer, mistress, my demanding, that is said ye have of Saint Apolline, for the toothache whereof this man is in pain, and the girdle there thou wearest about thee, and so many holy relics it hath touched, that this knight thinketh his boot thou mayest be. Therefore, let thy pity now be avouched, for my heart for fear like a dog is couched. The delight of vengeance whoso doth use, pity at their need shall them refuse.
If this be true that thou sayst to me now, mine heart is lightened, perceiving the case. I would be content well if I wist how to bring this sick knight unto some solace.
Fair damsel, to thee be health and grace. But if this knight and ye were acquainted both two, you would not judge him the man that you do. By God and by my soul, in him is no melancholy. With grace endued in freedom as Alexander, in strength as Hector, in countenance merry, gracious envy in him reigned never. Of noble blood, as thou knowest, and if ye ever saw him armed, he seemeth a Saint George, rather than to be made in nature's forge. An angel thou wouldst judge him, I make a vow. The gentle Narcissus was never so fair that was enamoured of his own shadow. Wherefore, fair maid, let thy pity repair. Let mercy be thy mother, and thou her heir. This knight whom I come for never ceaseth, but crieth out of pain that still increaseth.
How long time, I pray thee, hath it holden him?
I think he be 24 years of age. I saw him born, and hope for to fold him.
I demand thee not thereof, thine answer assuage. I ask thee how long in this painful rage he hath lain.
Of truth, fair maiden, as he says, he hath been in this agony this 8 days. But he seemeth as he had lain this 7 year.
Oh, how it grieveth me, the ill of my patient. Knowing his agony and thy innocency here, unto mine anger thou hast made resistance, wherefore thy demand I grant in recompense. Have here my girdle, the prayer is not ready. Tomorrow it shall be, come again secretly. And, mother, of these words passed between us, show nothing thereof unto this knight, lest he would report me cruel and furious. I trust thee now be true, for thoughts be light.
I marvel greatly thou dost me so atwite of the doubt that thou hast of my secretness. As secret as thyself I shall be doubtless, and to Callisto with his girdle Celestina shall go, and his leady heart make whole and light. For Gabriel to Our Lady with Ave Maria came never gladder than I shall to this night. Callisto, how wilt thou now sit upright? I have showed thy water to thy physician. Comfort thyself, the field is half won.
Mother, he is much beholden unto thee.
Fair maiden, for the mercy thou hast done to us this night, and I both thy bead folks shall be.
Mother, if need be, I will do more than thus.
It shall be needful to do so, and righteous, for this thus begun must needs have an end, which never can be without ye condescend.
Well, mother, tomorrow is a new day. I shall perform that I have promised, show to this sick knight in all that I may, bid him be bold in all things honest, and though he to me as yet be but a guest, if my word or deed his health may support, I shall not fail, and thus bid him take comfort.
Now, Christ comfort thee and keep thee in thy need. Now, say you, now is not this matter carried clear? Cannot old Celestina her matter speed? A thing not well handled is not with a bean. Now know ye by the half tale what the whole doth mean. These women at the first be angry and furious. Fair weather cometh after storms tempestuous. And now to Callisto I will me dress, which lieth now languishing in great pain, and show him that he is not remediless, and bear him this to make him glad and fain, and handle him, so that ye shall see plain that I am well worthy to bear the name, for to be called a noble archdame.
Oh, marvellous God, what a dream had I tonight! Most terrible vision to report and hear. I had never none such, nor none earthly white. Alas, when I think thereon, I quake for fear. It was of Melibea, my daughter dear. God send me good tidings of her shortly, for till I hear from her, I cannot be merry.
Oh, dear father, nothing may me more displease, nothing may do me more annoyance, nothing may do me greater disease than to see you, father, in any perturbance. For me chiefly, or for any other chance. But for me, I pray you not to be sad, for I have no cause but to be merry and glad.
Oh, sweet Melibea, my daughter dear, I am replete with joy and felicity, for that ye be now in my presence here, as I perceive in joy and prosperity. From death to life, me thinketh it reviveth me for the fearful dream that I had lately.
What dream, sir, was that, I pray you heartily?
Doubtless, methought that I was walking in a fair orchard, which were places two. The one was a hot bath, wholesome and pleasing to all people that did repair thereto, to wash them and clean them from sickness also. The other of a pit of foul, stinking water. Shortly they died, all that herein did enter. And unto this wholesome bath, methought that ye in the right path were coming apace. But before that, methought that I did see a foul, rough bitch, a prick-eared cur, it was, which, straking her body along on the grass, and with her tail licked her so, that she made herself a fair spaniel to me. This bitch then, methought, met you in the way, leaping and fawning upon you apace, and round you about did run and play, which made you then disport and solace, which liked you so well that in short space the way to the hot bath and long ye left it, and took the straight way to the foul pit. And ever ye looked continually upon that same bitch, and so much her eye that he came to the foul pit brink suddenly, like to have fallen in and to have been destroyed, which when I saw, anon then I cried, starting in my sleep, and therewith did awake, and yet for fear me think my body doth quake. Was not this a fearful dream and marvellous? I pray you, daughter, what think ye now to this? What speak ye not? Why be ye now so studious? Is there anything that have charged you amiss? I am your father. Tell me what it is.
Oh, alas, now your dream you have expressed hath made me all pensive and sore abashed.
Hey, you dear daughter, now tell me why.
Sir, I know the cause of your vision and what your dreadful dream doth signify.
Thereof would I fain now have no little.
Alas, dear father, alas, what have I done? I have offended God as wretched, unworthy.
Wherein? Despair not, God is full of mercy.
Then on my knees now I fall down, and of God chiefly ask forgiveness. And next of you, for into oblivion I have put your doctrine and lessons, doubtless.
Fear not, daughter, I am not merciless. I trust ye have not so greatly offended, but that right well it may be amended.
Ye have fostered me up full lovingly in virtuous discipline, which is the right path to all grace and virtue, which doth signify by your dream the fair, pleasant, wholesome bath. The foul pit whereof ye dreamed, which hath destroyed so many, betokeneth vice and sin, in which, alas, I had almost fallen in. The prick-eared cur and the foul bitch, which made herself so smooth and fair to see, betokeneth an old queen, a bawdy witch, called Celestina, that woe might she be, which with her fair words I so persuaded me that she had almost brought me hereunto to fulfill the foul lust of Callisto.
Alas, dear daughter, I taught you a listen, which way ye should attain unto virtue, that was every morning to say an orison, praying God for grace or vice to eschew.
Oh, dear father, that lesson I have kept true, which preserved me, for though I did consent and mind, yet had he never his intent.
The virtue of that prayer, I see well one thing, have preserved you from the shame of that sin. But because you were somewhat consenting, ye have offended God greatly therein. Wherefore, daughter, ye must now begin humbly to beseech God of his mercy for to give you your sin and misery.
O blessed Lord and Father Celestial, whose infinite mercy no tongue can express, though I be sinner, wretch of wretches all, yet of thy great mercy grant me forgiveness. For all sore I repent my sin, I confess, and tending henceforth never to offend more, now humbly I beseech thy mercy therefore.
Now that is well said, mine own fair daughter. Stand up, therefore, for I know verily that God is good and merciful ever to all sinners which will ask mercy and be repentant and in will clearly to sin no more. He of his great goodness will grant them therefore his grace and forgiveness. Lo, here ye may see what a thing it is to bring up young people virtuously in good custom. For grace doth never miss to them that use good prayers daily, which have preserved this maid undoubtedly, and kept her from actual deed of shame, brought her to grace, preserved good name. Wherefore, ye virgins and fair maidens all, unto this example now take good heed. Serve God daily, the sooner ye shall to honesty and goodness no doubt proceed, and God shall send you ever his grace and need to withstand all evil temptations that shall come to you by any occasions. And ye, fathers, mothers and other which be rulers of young folks. Your charge is doubtless to bring them up virtuously and to see them occupied still in some good business, not in idle pastime or unthriftiness, but to teach them some art, craft, or learning, whereby to be able to get their living. The bringers up of youth in this region have done great harm because of their negligence, not putting them to learning or occupation. So when they have no craft nor science and come to man's state, ye see the experience that many of them compelled me to beg or steal by very necessity. But if there be therefore any remedy, the heads and rulers must first be diligent to make good laws and execute them straightly upon such masters that be negligent. Alas, we make no laws but punishment when men have offended, but laws evermore will be made to prevent the cause before, which by conjecture thought to be most likely. And good laws and ordinance made therefore to put away the cause that were best remedy. What is thy cause that there be so many thefts and robberies? It is because men be driven on thereto by need and poverty. What is the very cause of that need? Because they labor not for their living. The truth is, they cannot well labor indeed, because in youth of their idle upbringing, but this thing shall never come to reforming. The world continually shall be naught, as long as young people be evil upbrought. Wherefore, the eternal God that reigneth on high sent his merciful grace and influence to all governors that they circumspectly may rule their inferiors by such prudence to bring them to virtue and due obedience. And that they and we all, by his great mercy, may be partners of his blessed glory. Amen.
Amen. Well done, everybody, bringing out so many things there, suggesting so many possibilities there.
That's so funny at the end.
Right. We've said this before, and we've said this many a time. And it's a shame, actually, even almost a year since we first looked at this. I still haven't yet got out the Dame Cirith episode of the podcast that is actually recorded and ready, which is, if not necessarily a direct source for this, but is the same sort of idea, and must be somewhere on that list. The Celestina has a long pedigree as a figure, and all of that stuff about, oh, I'm so old, because it's all part of the act that you're putting on and setting up, and there's a question of when you drop the act as well, when you sort of just give up and move on to plan number two, or you know, how you work this con that you've got set up here. And the relationships that you have with so many people. There is another version of of the play that this is translated, adapted from, or the book rather that this is adapted from, which is much, much later, which we haven't got around to looking at yet. So there will be a compare and contrast exercise coming sometime anon. But this is a very, very small section of that book in terms of material. How was it for people, especially for those who are new to this text? Some of us have been here before. Many, many times. For those who are here, who's here for the first time on this play? So I'll go to Lindsay first. How was Celestina for you?
Oh, I mean, just so so well written that really it just doesn't require a lot of work in you know, in a reading like this, because you just read it and it's all there. It's all there in the text. So it's absolute joy. And I love these characters that are just so good at manipulating and getting what they want out of other people and conning other people, and especially under the guise of, you know, holiness and that kind of thing. It's just fantastic. It's great stuff.
It's really. And I really like Callisto, and there's lots of interesting options about what's going on with Callisto at the end, especially, you know, who seems to be a very pious father who has dreams, and the piety that she expresses throughout, and, you know, what's going on with her relationships with other people. I'm really interested in what play there might be there. I meant Melibee. That's the one. Melibee is the word. The other character that I was talking about. Yes, Melibee. Rachel. Yes, the journey of Melibee in this play, and what's going on with her father and this persistent sex pest that is Callisto. That's probably going too far.
No, I think
debate
it's
to be debated right. Yet. I don't want to lead the witnesses. Rachel.
Oh no, I think that's just about right for her. That he's annoying. I like this because it's like some of these tropes in these plays that happen. What do you call it? It's like if a real person with actual common sense walked in and they're like, what, you know what I mean? Like if, like an actual person's reaction to the nonsense that somebody would say, you get annoyed.
Mm.
And he seems to be I don't know how to describe it. Him and his friends, that those young men who I don't know, don't seem to get out much, and they have all these very sexist opinions on women, and then they hit on you with their sexist opinions at the same time.
Yeah, and yeah, she just completely shuts him down, and you know, okay, she is taken in, but thankfully only for a bit. And you know, it is good that you know that okay, it's via a really weird dream. There's something about so many realizations. Eric.
Yes.
Shall we talk about you? Not you, your character, Callisto. Shall we talk about Callisto?
Yeah, okay.
We can ask other people
really
about Callisto.
I was trying really hard not to look at Alexandra while she was talking, like, as Sempronio, because it was just like trying not to laugh, basically. Because basically, Callisto is this schmuck, or AKA, you know, in for want of a better word, who thinks he's in love with Melibee. Then again, yeah. He might just be like, as Rachel just said, someone who hits on women for, you know, to see what happens.
Well, you know, maybe deep, you know, that's his worldview, but he, you know, he just. Doesn't know when to stop. Alexandra.
Yeah, I had a quite a different perception of him. I got the impression that he really does believe, you know, that he is most poetically in that, like, you know, Callisto lives in a Callisto thinks this play is a medieval romance, whereas Melibee is, you know, something like 8 centuries later going, I said no, it meant no, it still means no. So I'm really loving that from the perspective of putting it on as a production. I love the idea of you know, really strongly going in one kind of, I don't know, medieval fantasy direction with one side of the story, and then the other side of the story just completely undercutting that with reality ensuing, like Rachel was saying.
Yeah, Rachel's there just playing with her phone, and and he's there dressed in full courtly thing. You know, he does seem to have read all the courtly the romances, I mean, and believes that somehow they're an instruction manual.
This is
and
what
when
one
you
does.
Try it in real life, you know what? Doesn't work.
Yeah. And along comes Sempronius, entirely unhelpfully, going, "What? You want to respect the woman? What is this outrage?" So yeah, that's I had fun with that, but I was also really pleased when he was gone.
Yeah, you are something of a bit of a git there.
See, I was surprised when I read this, like when we were, not preparing, but like sort of, you know, when you sent us the script, and I was like, okay, this is actually an interesting ending compared to like them sort of either slut shaming the woman or sort of going, you know, she's just playing hard to get because she doesn't want to sleep with me kind of thing. It didn't do either of those things, which was actually quite a relief.
Yeah, I mean, it's a slightly contrived ending, you know. Father comes in and he's had a dream, and then basically turns to the audience at the end. I mean, I think Father is still talking to Melibee for about 7 lines, and then the rest of that final speech is just addressed to the audience. I've actually marked it as such because it could be that he's still talking to us, but it doesn't feel like that. It feels like, and now the play's ended. Let me just go over the moral of the story.
You were talking earlier about, I don't know why I ended up channeling Barchester Towers vicar or something with that voice, but that's how it felt I was going. I'm actually tempted to almost drop that after those 7 lines and just do a normal voice, because you're ultimately ending up playing to the audience. I felt that, you know, you've got that opportunity to say, and the dads, the mums, the whatever's, you know, there's a very sense of change. I didn't in the end, but I think that's what I'll ultimately do, is just because A, that knackered my voice, and B, it needs that change of tone almost.
Yeah, that's it's a lot of Danny there, isn't it?
In a wonderful way, it was nice, because I thought the dad doesn't do much, and then I realized, no, but he has one hell of a John Mayall speech.
Well, I'm looking at it going, well, in a performance, you know, it's going to be doubled with somebody earlier on. Though who, that's not, is one of the servants. Yes, I was looking, it's probably you. Goes off, puts on a beard.
Better than Calista, yeah.
And that'll be that.
I as we said last week, that's what I love is you might get a relatively small part, but actually you can have so much fun with it.
And you know, ultimately, it's not a desperately long play either. I mean, we didn't really trouble an hour. I mean, I think in performance it would be slower, and there's things to be found in that. And enjoyments to be had, especially with an audience responding as well. I think Celestina would, you know, give us another 5 minutes just simply because we'd have to keep the audience from tittering too much. We're not at home to Mr. Gaffour, thank you. We need to finish the play. Rachel, you were waving.
Oh, no, I was going to say if it was like Celestina, like could Celestina and Danny double? Or do they just, no, she walks out right as he walks in, but it says that he has a beard, and she said that she has a beard, and I know that's because it's all probably men playing all these people or something, but I love Danio. He's so funny, and just her reaction when he comes in, like, "Oh, Father, great, you're here. What do you want?" Just she's what do you call it? I feel like the opposite of what in other plays, like, you know, what is it? The opposite of patient Grizel or something, but she's not the ideal woman at all. And she has a bit of a temper.
Yeah, I, you know, and you know, having realised, you know, her mistake, and you know, the fact that her father's going to be really unhappy, you know, I like the idea that, you know, that she gets on the knees and this, you know, she knows what her father is like. Okay, on knees, really, really forgive, you know, and then, you know, Daniel, fear not, daughter, I am not merciless. He's just going. There's lots of potential and wiggle room for what these characters are actually doing and saying, as well as what they are, you know, if that makes sense, you know, that there is subtext potentially here, which you don't normally expect of a play from the early 16th century. Alexandra.
Yeah, just relating to that, I also love the idea of, you know, once Melibe has got on her knees and begged for forgiveness and father has started on the speech, I just love the idea of physical comedy, if possible, completely undercutting what's going on in the big, you know, father is facing forward, telling the audience about obedience and about, you know, young people nowadays, while Melibe behind him is kind of, you know, what's the word? Waddling away on her knees, you know, trying to leave the space or something.
Or, you know, trying to stand up and he's going, no, still more kneeling. I am doing the speech now. And strange things like that. Eric?
There was a bit, I think it was Celestina's bit right before Daniel comes in where she's like, Callisto, you know, I've made great remedy of whatever and you can stop groaning now. And I can keep imagining him like lying on the bed on the side of the stage going, oh, I'm dying. Or some sort of overacting drama kind of thing. And then she's like, shut up, I'm doing my speech now, kind of. Or even, I don't know, murdering the pillow.
Lindsay.
I just wondered whether in the spirit of Celestina being an early incarnation of a pantomime dame, whether you know, when she first comes out, she says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm looking such a mess. You know, please forgive me." But whether in reality she's absolutely the dog's bollocks in everything that she's wearing and, like, you know, it's like, oh, this old thing.
It is so panto dame. It is, yeah. It's practically, you know, oh, I've got a new dress on. You know, I just got it from insert local topical gag in, you know, moment.
Yeah.
And then we have the relationship with Parmino, who knows you of old, and it's sort of the strange relationship you have with his mother, the thing that's going on there, which we still haven't quite nailed down. Alex, did you have any thoughts on them?
I was present, I think, when we read this originally. Although it's weird because the only thing I remember from it is Celestina. I literally remember nothing else other than that. But it's odd how some of the characters, I know that the Ferdinando de Rojas or whoever the Spanish author was, I know his stuff goes on further. It's odd that we don't get, it sort of feels like Parmino is going to go somewhere and become a sort of like Janus character, like a sort of two-faced character, and then sort of doesn't ever appear again really and doesn't have any impact on the narrative. And it's almost weird that there's that weird relationship fleshed out that then never develops anywhere. So I don't know, as an audience, again, I don't know how I would feel about not pursuing those relationships. And I wonder whether you do have to subvert it and kind of have a sort of Monty Python-esque kind of, okay, stop now, this is where this is stopping, because it does go on longer in the original. But yeah, that relationship is... It's like the bringing in of Ariusa and the other one, who I think appear in the original Spanish novel but don't appear again in this, that those details are included.
Yeah, there's given a whole backstory and logic to why things are... And things. I mean, there's a part of me that thinking it'd be quite nice to try and find a way of eliding Sempronio and Parmino, because I don't think we need... I mean, there are sort of... there are reasons within this text as to why there are two... but I wonder whether there's actually a simplification here that might make sense. I think we can go to Stephen, who was our audience for this particular run. Stephen, do you have any thoughts? I think you've been here before with this play in some way, shape or form, as I recall. But anything from you?
Well, I mean, I wish I'd left my sound on at least, because I was laughing my head off. It was really, really laugh out loud funny, which, you know, it's not something that happens to me very often with these. Maybe I've got old and jaded. But I think performance-wise, I think there's such a strong collection of turns in there. And I've already said in the chat, but I really was reminded of, you know, the kind of the English commedia of the 60s and 70s, a.k.a. the Carry On films, where you had very, very strongly delineated types. It seemed to me to be beautifully written for comedy potential. All the way through, there was a real comic sensibility there in terms of the interactions between people, I think. From the very beginning, where, you know, there's this sort of ludicrous repetition of, you know, Brennith and Burning, and he's got the app and he's doing Courtney Love off the app, you know, kind of thing. Swiping along. Now let's go back to Brennith again. You know, it's kind of like that. So it's great, really. I really, really enjoyed it. I enjoyed all the performances. It's not the tightest, is it? You would need, as Alex says, you'd need to tidy it up. And coming back to a point that Alexandra made, it is that sort of weird thing of seeming extremely modern and extremely medieval at the same time, you know. And from that point of view, comparing it to, you know, the moral plays that I know, it doesn't seem to be the same beast whatsoever. You know, we don't have, you know, not least because if anything resembling a vice figure is actually Celestina, isn't it? Mm. There's, you know, and Greg put out beautifully, the moral framing of the whole thing is just so easy to send up. You know, right at the end, you know, it's not like we have a bit of vice in the middle of it and then order is restored. You know, that came across really, really nicely in Greg's final speech there, where it just descends into this kind of, you know, the use of today are dreadful right at the end there. It's, you know, it could almost be written to do that. Do you know what I mean? It's the speech does kind of fall apart, or maybe Greg just sort of found that there. So I think it's really, really interesting sort of, From the point of view of us doing this year-long investigation and comparing it with other things, I think it really is original, isn't it? And very, very performable.
Mm. I mean, not to say that it isn't original, but I think it's a snapshot into what we've lost.
Yes.
You know, we have, if you look at the medieval and the really early Tudor, you know, it's all the God show. That's, you know, we have so few survivals, and this is why I keep mentioning Dame Sirith and Interludium de Clerico et Puella, which is available on the podcast, which are basically the same thing. So Dame Sirith is a sort of play thing from the 13th century, and then the early 14th century you have Interludium de Clerico et Puella, which is about an old wise woman who is asked by a young man to try and persuade his interest to change her mind, and you know, so that's several hundred years earlier. And then between that and this, and in terms of surviving secular comedy, we've got Fulgence and Lucrece, and some funny bits in some other stuff that's about God, and that's about it. There isn't really anything else, even though we can be fairly certain there's a hell of a lot of other stuff that would have been in existence. It's just it doesn't survive.
I think the jest books are the kind of help us with that missing link, don't they? The prose stories in the jest books, which tremendous number of them are set in an obviously medieval world. You know, there's friars and nuns and so forth. Even 1600, you know, people are still consuming these stories, and I think there would, you know, there will have been an awful lot more plays like that. So we do have a sort of prose sense. Right the way through the 16th century. But you're absolutely right. But why would people write this stuff down?
Mm.
You know, we don't go out and buy a Carry-On script, do we?
Mm. Yes, because the jest books are sort of almost the equivalent of toilet books in a sense. You know, that is that, you know, they're not quite that, but they're in that sense of being semi-disposable. even though they're incredibly popular, or they were very popular. Alexandra, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I had a query. I just remembered when we were talking about, you know, potentially conflating characters or potentially figuring out how and why certain characters just randomly seem to disappear after having a lot of setup. I then suddenly remembered there are lacunae. There are places where there seems to be text missing, at least according to the way that my script is formatting. So I wanted to ask about those, whether we know how long the bits that are missing might be and or what they might contain by inferring from source material.
As far as I can tell, the only bits where that are explicitly missing are a few bits of a line. It's words, it's just damage to a manuscript. And we don't have the song. Unless somehow that speech that follows is sung, but I don't see it, you know, it didn't seem to make any sense. So there is a song that we do not have. And that's I think it. I mean, I think it's partly because it seems to be like let's translate this other thing. And they would try to make it fit to an interlude structure of let's do about an hour, or, you know, and that seems to be the kind of thing that Rastor was interested in at the time and his set. And it was like, you do 900 lines and then stop. And it might just be as simple as that. I don't think, however, there is anything structurally missing. This seems to be as intended. But anyway, we need to stop now because we need to talk about what we might do with this text for the next session we do this text with. So all that remains, thank all these wonderful readers and our viewers. Thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye.